the views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Guardian Radio Today is brought to you by the Cleveland Clinic and Prince Masters.
I will only say once, I don't like the system. It is messing up the minds of our children of today. Can't you see what's happening in the world? It is time for us to take hold, make a stand. You see, only our education can best play the pathway for us. We got to prepare ourselves for the future. You got to speak the truth, okay? See, last year, Rastafari.
What's the reason? Tell me why. People suffer, children die. Ain't got no money. You think it's funny? We need the money, mate. You gotta make it such a long street. Nothing racist, you're from the concrete. Them narrate with my down seat. What's the problem? Let everyone speak.
And welcome to another edition of Guardian Radio Today with your host, Pastor Dr. Cleveland W. Enius III, also known as Kahun Anku Sarah. We have a great show planned for you today. We'll be with you up until the 4 o'clock hour. And before we open the phone lines, I'll let you know what they are. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, the Family of Violence, 242-300-5720. The Guardian Radio text line is powered by BTC. That's 422-4796. Standard text rates do apply. We're streaming live on guardiantalkradio.com. And you can also get us at Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or BTC Flow Channel 612. Special show today. Every show is a special show. But today, I want to touch on a topic that I know it can become controversial, but I want it to be educational because there's a lot of ignorance around this topic. And today's topic is Bahamian-Haitian relations in a pan-African world. Bahamian-Haitian relations in a pan-African world. I'm going to introduce the guests in just a second, but I just want to set the table a bit before I introduce my guests, right? So both the Bahamian and the Haitian populations are overwhelmingly descended from West and Central Africa, brought through the transatlantic slave trade. Haiti's revolution, 1791 to 1804, was the first successful slave revolt to create an independent black republic. That event sent shockwaves through the Caribbean and influenced black consciousness everywhere, including the Bahamas. Haitian migration to the Bahamas. Historians will say it started in the early 1900s, but I have a guest here who has some things that I'm sure is going to dispute that. But they say it started early in the early 1900s for agricultural work, especially they say sisal and sugar. Accelerated over after the 1950s due to the political instability and poverty in Haiti. Today, Haitians and Bahamians of Haitian descent are the largest immigrant group in the Bahamas, estimated at approximately 50 to 100,000 people in a country of 400,000. That's the numbers they're giving us. Now, of course, this brings about points of tension. Haitian migrants often work in construction, agriculture, and domestic work. They're seen as providing cheap labor that fuels the Bahamian economy, especially tourism and development. That creates resentment in a small labor market. A large number of Haitians in the Bahamas are undocumented or stateless. The Bahamas does not grant citizenship by birthright. Children born in the Bahamas to non-Bahamian parents don't automatically get citizenship. This has led to repeated shantytown demolitions and deportations, especially after hurricanes. The Bahamas built its national identity around being a stable, Anglophone, majority black, but British Commonwealth nation. Haitian migrants are Francophone, Creole-speaking, Catholic, slash voodoo practicing, and associated with poverty. That creates a cultural and class divide within the black population. Politicians have used anti-Haitian rhetoric during election cycles. Terms like illegal Haitians and shantytown become political flashpoints. Now, the Pan-African lens. Pan-Africanism emphasizes solidarity among African-descended people across borders. From that view, the Bahamian-Haitian relationship is contradictory, they will say. So here are some of the solidarity elements. There's a shared history of resistance. Haitian independence was a Pan-African reference point for black liberation globally. There's a cultural exchange through music, religion, and food. Junkanoo in the Bahamas has Haitian influences. The diaspora organizations and churches often bridge the gap at the grassroots level. But here's where the friction comes in for some people. The class stratification within the black diaspora. Bahamians with 200 plus years in the country often have more access to land, citizenship, and government jobs than recent Haitian migrants. Post-colonial state building, the Bahamian state prioritizes protecting citizenship and social services for nationals, which puts it at odds with open borders or regularization. So, today, we're going to merge a lot of what I have discussed today as far as setting the table. And I want to introduce my guest, Christopher Davis, also known as Jankwa II. I let him give his full name, but I know Ms. Jankwa II. We also have Luby Judges. And we have Mr. Bates. I want each of you just to introduce yourself before we get into this conversation. I'll start with you, Brother Chris. Jankwa.
Christopher Davis. So Jankwa II translates in the Hanta language to Chief Junkanoo II. So I've been researching now for going on 14 years, been doing a lot of research, particularly surrounding Junkanoo, Pan-Africanism in the Bahamas, resistance, race relations, and of course in my book I published 3 years ago, Black Rents, I have an entire chapter that is dedicated to the historical relationship, focusing more on the 18th and 19th century between Haiti and the Bahamas.
Yes.
Yeah. And I also am a manager at the Clifton Heritage Authority. I'm always out there at Clifton Heritage National Park. But first and foremost, above all, I'm a Pan-Africanist.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Luby Judges.
How you doing, my brother?
Good, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Good evening, Bahamas. Good evening, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been quite some time.
Yes.
You and I have sat behind microphones together.
I tell you.
But Luby Judges, currently working in the capacity of immigration consultant. Mm-hmm. Not a consultant with the Department of Immigration.
And that's why I wanted to bring you here. I wanted you to clear that up, too. But go ahead, yes.
I've been clearing that up, man, for the past 5 years. You know, people are still running on with that. But, yeah. Of course, you know, you guys know that I'm an activist, a humanist also.
Yes.
So I'm here.
Yes.
Of course, I'm of Haitian descent.
Yes.
So I think that I can add some value to this conversation.
Yes, today. I think so, too. Mr. Beads.
Yes. Good day, Bahamas. It's your boy, Mr. Beads. I am a local influencer, actors, musician, artists, and I love the Bahamas, man. This is my home. I've been living here my whole entire life and concerned about everything Bahamian and everything that's going on in the country. So I'm here today to fellowship with these awesome men, man. A lot of great men in the studio. I feel humbled to be here with these guys today.
I'm really happy to have all of you here and, of course, happy to have the Texans and the listeners. We'll open up the phone lines in a bit, but I just want everyone to kind of be able to set the table from their different perspectives, right? I think a big problem in the country today, in the Bahamas today, is, Luby, you started out by saying you've been trying to explain your situation for 5 years. Jankwa, you've been for 14 years trying to explain the reality of what the Haitian Revolution actually means, not just for the Bahamas, but for the diaspora and the world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Beads, you've been pushing your music and doing your influencing for a while. I want us to have a conversation today that can educate and inform people. Yes, people are going to have their position. You can't change that. Or maybe it will change. Who knows? But, Chris, I want you to just give us some insight into when did Bahamians and Haitians start to intermingle? Because when we were pulled out of Africa, we was a nation or Bahamian.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So first of all, I think it's important to understand geopolitical loyalty. Okay. Right? So let's use China for an example. You can say someone is Chinese, right? Mm-hmm. And within certain countries, of course, there are certain ethnicities that are popular there. But mm-hmm. Chinese is not an ethnicity. You know, Mandarin, Cantonese, and all of the other ones, those kind of the ethnicities usually tied to language, right? Mm-hmm. So I say that to say this. Anybody from anywhere could be a Bahamian. It has absolutely nothing to do with any sort of ethnic background, right?
So there's no organic Bahamian?
I would love for Lincoln Brown to give a clear definition to what an organic Bahamian is.
I've been hearing that term, Brown.
I think he did give his definition.
Please share it with me so I could go through that with a fine tooth comb. It didn't require much effort, though. But anyway. So now, this relation, of course, Haiti did not come into full existence until 1804. It was known as Saint-Domingue, right? But at the same time, and so I see some people saying, well, the worst that came in the 1790s, they weren't quote-unquote Haitians, right? Mm. So there was always this movement, right? And there's confusion as well about other. So there's always this relationship with the Francophone world, first and foremost, right? So you have surnames like Poitier and Devaux, which are often confused with being Haitian, but are actually not. Those are French Huguenot names that then became British. You see the geopolitical loyalty?
Yes.
So today, I could get mad today, see something I don't like in the country, and declare myself, man, I ain't a Bahamian no more, go fly to Africa, go to a country that receives the diaspora like Ghana or Botswana, and then tomorrow I Ghanaian or Botswanan. God forbid, for the sake of the show, let's say some aliens from outer space come right now and conquer the Bahamas.
Aliens from outer space come conquer the Bahamas now,
and they decide to join the Bahamas back with Turks and Cuba and all that, and they decide to call it ZZ country, then we are ZZians or whatever it is, you understand? So that's very important to realize. And unfortunately, you see that this is really just a manifestation of white supremacy too, where it targets Haitians. It's usually black groups. You see it with Haitians, a little bit with Jamaicans. You see it even now with some of our African migrants, even though the majority of them are mostly middle to upper class, as a matter of fact, right? These are professionals. Now, this began, and of course, the surge began with the beginning of the Haitian Revolution. And you could almost, in my book, I almost pinpoint the month.
And say the name of your book, please.
Black Rinse, A New Perspective on the History of the African Diaspora in the Bahamas. So what people don't know, first of all, you got to give the Haitian Revolution its credit. It is the most profound revolution, acts of resilience, ever realized by humans in all of humanity. And any true historian will stand on that. You understand? Now, another thing they don't know is they defeated France, but they defeated the great Napoleon. But they also defeated King George in England and also Spain. When the revolution was over, soon after they had control of the entire island, right? Now, when this revolution started, of course, France and Britain were enemies. So we had the pirates with a license, a.k.a. privateers, who were able to sack the ships of their French enemies when people were leaving, like the Dillard family, with their property, right, which included enslaved people. You understand what I'm saying? And then what do you think happened when they took these ships with all of that property? They take the property. But the people that were considered property were absorbed into plantations on every island in the Bahamas, from Abaco and Grand Bahama to the north, straight down to the Turks and Caicos when it was once a part of the Bahamas to the south. And you even could see this in the register of enslaved people, where there are many, many, many people. Ironically, too, this term and this kind of view is skewed because you see names like Baptiste, which came in like 1791,
right
at the beginning of the Haitian Revolution, right? That's considered Bahamian name. Not considered a Bahamian name, but then you have other names that are considered quote unquote Bahamian names. I'd even pick on you, like the Aeneases.
Right.
Yeah. That might have come after one of these so called Haitians. So which one you understand?
That's the people who found us.
Right. Now, as they absorbed, let me close this point as quickly as I can. So, as they absorbed all of these quote unquote enslaved Haitians or people from Saint-Domingue, I was known at the time. Now, in April 1795, something profound happened. That's when the British get their cut up.
Okay.
And a province, a British province in Haiti, because Haiti, remember, was the richest province, the richest country in the Western Hemisphere at the time.
Yes.
So everyone who had the
power. That was the bike.
Thank you. Yeah. Wanted a piece of that. Mm-hmm. So Britain had a little corner in the northwestern extremity known as Mole St. Nicholas, right? Mm-hmm. Please will be the correct pronunciation.
Yes, Mole St. Nicholas.
Ah, there we go. Okay. Right. Okay. And that was where the British was defeated. When they burned that down, you could have seen the glow of the fires from Inagua and the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Wow.
Then all of a sudden, because, you know, most revolts, African revolts in the West, with the exception of people like Queen Anne, even if they had some success, eventually it would be toppled over.
Mm-hmm.
But when this resounding defeat of the British came, and they were the first to fall, by the way, in the revolution, this is when everyone started to wake up. And then all of the planter class, a.k.a. the Europeans that owned slaves, and their family members and the European class and the Bahamas at the time, they started getting scared. They say, mother sick, we've been bringing all of these. So within the next few months, they pass a bill in Parliament banning French Negroes. So you see how we start to adopt some of the same sentiments of our enslavers, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And lo and behold, in 1797, the fall of 1797, the affairs were realized.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't know is the Bahamas actually almost became the first black republic.
Wow.
In the Western Hemisphere.
So we could have been the Haiti of the revolution.
You know, I can get into the details of that, but the plan was essentially to raid Fort Montague, Fort Fincastle, and Fort Charlotte all simultaneously. It was not just they blamed it on French Negroes. Now watch this one. Luby, you're going to appreciate this. The sentiment was, when they found out about this plot to do this all-out revolt, man, we let all these Haitians come in, and they pollute the mind of all of these good slaves we had there who were well-being, which, of course, was not true either, because we was doing our own revolting. Just 2 years before that, they executed a man named Emmanuel Kemp, who was helping African-Americans to go to the Exuma Keys to escape slavery, right, to the point where they couldn't even give an accurate census. That's a part of the Saltwater Underground Railroad, which, after the revolutions, extended past the Bahamas down to Haiti, right? And then you come in, and I'm skipping over plenty of details. The five people ended up being executed for this plot. Mm-hmm. Listen to the names now. Police, Edgecombe. You get a French first name and a Bahamian surname, right?
Okay.
You get another one named Baptiste Tucker.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Right.
You first get last name?
Right. Yes. First and last, right. You see? So, just in 1797, so, you know, again, geopolitical loyalty. So this idea that it's some biological or ethnic ramifications between what is a Haitian and a Bahamian is completely false, because we are talking about geopolitical loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Then from the 1790s, you have had, up until slavery ended, I have counted over 1,000 enslaved people in the Bahamas. Watch the paradigm shift. Floating on raft. Floating on whatever they could float on to get to Haiti. Because after the Haitian Revolution, of course, it was declared that any person of African descent who touch our soil is automatically free.
Wow.
And the biggest event, which was possibly the biggest single event of runaways that I personally know of from a single plantation, where in 1822, upon the death of Wade Stubbs, who owned more, who had more enslaved people than John Roll, by the way, 401.
Wow.
When he died, they were selling people off, right? And this is how the Stubbs actually got to Kidd Island, because a lot of them were bought by Charles Poitier, Henry Williams, people like that. Now, the other side of it, though, you had 126 people. Most of them were Stubbses, but many of them were Gibbs, Lightborn, Darvilles, right? And these 126 people on about three or four ships stole all these boats, and where you think they sailed to for their freedom?
Wow.
In 1822. And what you and they got their freedom. There was another time.
Went to Haiti, went from here to Haiti.
Right. Wow. And there was another one in 1800, even before the revolution was over, this was happening. In 1800, where about 15 enslaved people in the Bahamas went down and get their freedom. And interestingly, you often
find, some of them might be coming back.
So the guy that led the group of 15.
Wow, this deep, this deep, you know. Right. Go ahead.
His name was Jean Vier.
Okay.
So you saw that their affairs were actually kind of realized with some of these fellas they bring here was participating in the revolution and did.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say they brought the revolutionary fervor, but their presence certainly did galvanize. Because, of course,
They just went.
They wanted freedom just as far as right. They just went, right, you see?
Yeah.
And, of course, you could argue that, I would argue that it would probably take another 50 years for emancipation to end if it was not for the Haitian Revolution.
Yeah.
The United States would be half the size it is today.
Yep. Yes.
Louisiana Purchase. They sell all their land for $15 million. Why? Because France was broke because they lost the richest thing. And this is why the resentment has remained, because France has never recovered. France used to be one of the top world powers. It was supposed to be China, Russia, America, and France. But the Haitian Revolution sort of prevented that. And I'll close on this point. You know, I have a lot more to say because I want others to chime in. But even when you look at some of the comments I saw during the Haitian Flag Day celebrations, this is something that should be celebrated by all. It's hard for me to put a man above Jean-Jacques Dessalines in terms of resistance, in terms of the spirit of Pan-Africanism. That's just facts. And even after they had won the war, of course, the French didn't want to meet with him. So Haitian Flag Day was birthed from the actions. This is like the culminating action of African liberty, like one of the greatest in all of human history, we're talking. You understand? And in frustration, which was typical for him, because he was a product of his environment, let's say that. Yeah, to beat a bunch of psychopaths, you got to be a psychopath yourself. You know, but at the end of the day, this is how the Haitian flag was formed, where he ripped the whites out of the French flag. And then it was sewn back together by another Haitian national hero by the name of Catherine Fawn. Right, who I believe was also the one when Dessalines was assassinated who dealt with his body, if I'm correct, right? You see? And so, are you getting goosebumps and all?
Man, you gave me goosebumps.
This is something that we, you know, and we understand people with legitimate concerns.
Yeah.
And that's why we talk about phobia, which is the irrational fear.
Yeah, and because I want people to understand, this show is not about illegal migration in any way, shape, or form. And notice I didn't say illegal Haitian migration, because not only Haitians come here illegally.
Right, exactly.
Let's just be clear about that, right? But I appreciate that perspective and that contextualization of this conversation, because we want to educate. You educating me, because I'm learning things that I learn a little bit more every time I talk to this brother, right?
Man, listen, I wish this man had a consistent show.
Yes.
I truly wish, you know, living in a predominantly black society and country, you know, the type of history and knowledge that you have.
Yes.
You know, I'm of Haitian descent, and you can tell Haitian history probably better than me.
Wow.
Now, mind you, a lot of the things that you just mentioned, I've heard over the years, you know, sitting at the feet of elders.
Yes.
Sitting at the feet of some persons in Haiti when visiting over the summers. Every single summer, my mother used to take me to Haiti. I'm not ashamed to say that every single summer, I went to Haiti and sat at the feet of the ancestors. And I listened to those stories, and I learned about Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Catherine Fawn, who sewed together the very first Haitian flag. One of the Latin American countries, if I'm not mistaken, Venezuela, their first flag was put together in Haiti.
Wow. If I may, just one, you see, you bring it.
It was put together in Haiti.
Wow.
Simon Bolivar, the great leader of South America. He was himself a slave owner, and he went to, I believe it was Henri Christophe at the time. And he was like, man, I need to fight Spain. About half of his troops were actually troops from Haiti. Okay? And you know what Henri Christophe make him do?
What?
Say, well, anywhere we free, you know, we got to free the black people.
Yeah.
And convince me you serious? Free all your slaves, please.
Right away.
Right then and there, Bolivar released us, and then it was that. So that's why to this day in Colombia and Venezuela, you still have Haitian villages in these areas that are actually revered within the Afro-Colombian and Afro-Venezuelan community. Sorry.
You tied it together, and this is why also it is widely known that one of the greatest friends Haiti has is Venezuela.
Right.
Okay.
Because of the same reason, the Venezuelan people and that entire region, I think they call people in that region Bolivarians or something to that effect.
And then you have Bolivia as well.
Bolivia,
Paraguay.
If you look at those countries, their flags are similar also. And to go back to that same story about Simon Bolivar, he actually made a first attempt to free his people and then had to come back to Haiti because they gave him the blueprint, but they were still unable to execute it.
Right.
So he had to come back. And on his way back, they said, you know what? We'll be arriving at you this time. And the flag was put together. Freedom was and liberation was declared before they even got back to South America to execute the mission. And so Haiti means a lot, you know, not just to the black diaspora, but to the world itself. And sadly, you know, Haitians in this day and time are the ones that are probably the most shunned, pushed aside, discriminated, faced prejudice. You know, if we bring it back home and to modern day, I can attest to what I have personally experienced.
Yeah.
You know, there is, I remember back in grade five, right at Uriah McPhee Primary School, grade five, my teacher then, and I won't call his name, sent me to the chalkboard to finish up some equation or some sentence, something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there with the chalk in my hand back to the, you know, rest of the class, thinking and trying to figure this thing out. And out of nowhere, the chalk was yanked out of my hands, kind of shoved me, and said to go sit down with your Haitian self, this little simple thing you can't figure out. The entire classroom laughed at me.
Wow.
I can tell you right now, that was my very first experience and most notable one in my memory to say to me then, very fragile young man, maybe 9 or 10 years old, that you're different.
Yes.
That there is something different between you, and this teacher highlighted it, and everybody laughed.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, I never experienced it. Mm. Born and raised in Camp Road, St. James Road proper.
Yes.
Building bicycles, shooting marbles. Mm-hmm. We in the bush building our camps in the summer.
We do it, right. All of us do.
Yeah. Going to the shop, and we had our little can of tuna and corned beef and our little white rice and all of the kids. We knew not what was Haitian and Bahamian.
Yeah.
I was in the Davis's. Oh, we had a lot of Davis's.
St.
Road.
Yeah, some of us were people, you know.
Okay. You know, just thought about that.
Yeah.
You know, we were up inside each other's homes frequently. They were up in my home, in my house, frequently. Your mother was my mother. You're Bahamian. I mean, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
We're eating the same. We're drinking. We're playing. We video games.
Let me just say.
And through the corner, there was no division between.
Let me stick a pin right there, because I even feel today a lot of us as Bahamians don't realize how many of our Bahamian friends are Haitian. Haitian.
I was just going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because that's for real for me, because I remember my best friends growing up, their last name was Jax.
Mm-hmm.
J-A-C-Q-E-S. Uh-huh. I never looked at them as no Haitian.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You know what I mean? Or looked at it in that regard. But then, you know, my mother was born in 1937. So one of the things that she shared with me, she was born on Long Island. She said, listen, growing up in the 1930s and 40s and early 50s, the Haitian boat used to come there and feed us.
Right. Yep.
Mm. We survived because of Haiti.
Yep.
Mm.
You know, my father was born in 34, I think, 34, mm-hmm. somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the same thing, too, you know, growing up in Providence. And so that was my understanding my small understanding of the history between the connection between Haiti and the Bahamas. But I have a question, and you can answer it now or later. Why don't we teach what you just said in our schools?
Great question.
Well, why are we focusing on Columbus and all these other stuff? That's what I'm saying.
That's because the cat out of the bag, Uncle.
Yeah, well,
most of what I said is actually going to be began to be teach in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our former now Minister of Education, she pushed that initiative, and she kind of picked out some of that. So Uncle actually wrote the chapter on, you know, African origins and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote the chapter on that. But I also edited a few other chapters, particularly, and I made sure that most of that, what I said about the relationship between Haiti and the Bahamas, and it's not just that relationship. You know, we arguably have an even stronger modern relationship. And to touch on the passage that you even read earlier, mm-hmm. you notice how they started it in the early 20th century.
Yes. And that's why I know this can't be.
And the willing Haitian migration that came to the Bahamas up until then was pure professionals.
Mm-hmm.
First black politicians.
Let me say
lawyers
this.
And doctors and merchants. Like, so it wasn't, you know, the quote-unquote downtrodden.
Yeah, I want you to finish. I want you to finish, but I want to say this before I forget. My grandmother, Muriel Fraser Enius, she was she became the principal at St. Anne's, but she taught French.
Right.
There was, and these were things that was happening around us when we were children, we didn't know. There was a gentleman who, I don't know, he was there to fix stuff around the house or whatever the case was. And he was speaking. And as he was speaking, and she didn't say nothing while he was there. And when he left, she looked at my grandfather and she said, he's very educated. She said, because his French is not, he's not even speaking Creole. He's speaking French.
Right.
But he was here just fixing stuff. If you just looked at him, you wouldn't have known. But she said, no, that's not, he's not a handyman per se. He's just doing what he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, man. And so those things are on the way.
If you can, because it's something I was learning too and studying some of the stuff.
Right.
The white Asians.
Yeah.
So we focus mainly on color skin and we look at black Asians,
right.
But we don't know a lot of history of white Asians that migrated to the Bahamas and move around, and stuff like that too.
Exactly. So from the late 1700s, that would have mostly have been whites that willingly emigrated to the Bahamas, right? Mm-hmm. Who also owned enslaved people. Do you understand? So like the name I called earlier, Baptiste, you add Macron. The xenophobia was so strong then, and it was almost like it was little spikes of it throughout our history, to the point where, and it still happens today, and people actually criticize people of Haitian descent for doing it, when it's literally done not to try to steal some identity, but just so they could be safer in a society where not all of us, of course, but too many people hate them, you know, and to digress a bit, we have these events, I ain't get too deep, but I sure Luby remember, I can just call the Palm Key event that happened some years ago. We have had some horrible things.
That was horrible.
Right. People people forget why Loftus Roker had to resign as Minister of Immigration too. I can leave that one alone because I know he's well loved. But let me leave that alone. But we know he's well loved. But just go and check back in the early 1980s. Why did he have to resign as Minister of Immigration? And see what our Bahamian soldiers did to some undocumented migrants with an asterisk at the top.
Yeah. And see, a lot of this show, a lot of what I'm hearing, it spawns out of a lot of self-hate.
Yeah, certainly.
Yes. That we as a people have, and we often have this misplaced anger towards each other as opposed to the actual systems that are oppressing Haitians and Bahamians,
exactly.
Jamaicans, Bajans, etc. You understand? We're going to go to a break. When we come back, Luby, I want you to again just explain what your role is as the immigration
consultant.
And then I have some questions, some texts are coming through. And then, of course, we'll open up the phone lines eventually. But this is Guardian Radio Today. I am your host, Pastor Dr. Cleveland W. News III, also known as Calhoun and Kusara, Haitian and Bahamian relationships in a pan-African world. That's what we're talking about today. Keep it locked.
Babylon, create the problems, then turn around trying to solve them. I saw my sister Baphomet of them, away with the idol gods them. Some praise.
Budgeting and saving? Yes. Investing? Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Plus, you can house all your investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
At Star General, you can go gold. Comprehensive car insurance covers loss or damage from accidents, fire, theft, and third-party liability. But the gold package gives you increased coverage for rental car and windscreen, personal accident, medical benefits, deductible waiver, and 24-hour roadside assistance where available. Our Star General Gold Package also gives you up to $2,500 for accidental damage to a rental car anywhere in the Bahamas. Go gold with Star General. Insurance made simple.
Turn a trip to Burger King Nassau into a galactic adventure with the Mondo and Grogu Whopper Combo, featuring special shake fries. Whether you're a bounty hunter in training or just here for your way, Burger King Nassau has everything Mandalorian and Grogu related. You can walk, grab the toys, the mugs, the crowns, and your crew, and head on down to BK and celebrate. Break the Mandalorian and Grogu Adventure with Burger King Nassau. This is the way.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Yes, indeed. We're back here on Guardian Radio today with your host, Dr. Cleveland W. Enius III. Special guest in studio today, John Kwa II, also known as Christopher Davis, Luby Georges, and Mr. B. Did I say your last name correct, Georges?
It's actually George.
George. Let me say, I want to say it properly. George. Right? Luby George. And Luby is Louis?
Luby, yes.
Luby George. And, of course, Mr. Beats. We're having a conversation today that I pray is one of many. Because we need to have the conversations that bridge this gap between that rhetoric seems to fill. There's a lot of rhetoric that fills the gap. A lot of ignorance that fills the gap. When we have such a rich history that can be built on in this country. Luby, I got some questions. I just want to get out of the way because, you know, people...
Well, they got questions for me.
They got questions for you, Luby.
George Crowley's here. All of that rich history.
You can get it today.
They've been waiting on you.
Does Luby... I'm going to read three of them. Well, three of them and you can answer. Does Luby support illegal immigration? Let me do it one at a time. Does Luby support illegal immigration? What's your answer, Luby?
I'll answer by saying this. I'm an immigration consultant.
Yes.
I think that alone should answer that question. Persons
so
like
if it answer this question, do Willie denounce illegal immigration?
I'm an immigration consultant.
Right. Does he adhere to and respect the laws of the Bahamas?
I'm an immigration consultant. So <that's it. laughs> I mean, just a mere fact of what I do.
So you tell us more about what that is. What is it to be immigration consultant?
You know, I not to call out anyone, right? Mm-hmm. But Mr. Lincoln Brown said throughout his campaign and on his lives all the time, we're not against Haitians. We're against illegal migration.
Mm-hmm.
But we just want people to do it the right way. But what do you think I exist for?
Okay.
Immigration consultants, this is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We help persons to navigate the processes the right way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Listen, I've encountered scores. I mean, I can't count the amount of persons who were even born here in the Bahamas, who at 18 are eligible to apply to be registered as Bahamian citizens, mm-hmm. who do not know which documents they need.
Wow.
And guess what? In needing those documents, they have to also find their parents' documents.
Okay.
To complete the application. Mm-hmm. Parents who were born in other countries, mm-hmm. like Haiti. Some parents who were born in very rural areas without proper
documentation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your mommy was born in the 50s or the 60s in rural Haiti.
Yeah.
We're able to navigate and to contact the embassy and other agencies in Haiti from these, you know, I've been, and other consultants have been responsible.
You're not the only consultant?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. Listen, there are scores of consultants here.
It sounded to me like you were speaking projecting.
That is what we do, you know. Mm-hmm. The consultants are literally helping to protect the borders by ensuring that people do it the right way and helping them to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to help hundreds of people in having their parents' documents properly registered in their home country.
Right.
Whereas you send off in Port-au-Prince and they can't find it. So now we have to figure out where your parents were from in Haiti, whatever section that may be. Go to the proper government agency in that section because they have these big old log books manually writing these things. Anku, born September, whatever, 1980, whatever. And until such time as the book is completely filled, they're not sending it off to Port-au-Prince.
Oh, wow.
That happens also for the debts.
Wow.
And so when persons like us make contact, that information is then pushed forward to Port-au-Prince. It's properly organized and documented at the National Archives, at the judiciary level, at Haitians Foreign Affairs, before that document can come here.
Mm-hmm.
And then a person like me would translate that into English. And then take it to the Haitian embassy and have them authenticate it.
Right.
They authenticate it by contacting the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and to say, hey, give them the registration number and all of these serial numbers that's on the document. Please authenticate. Foreign Affairs lets them know, yes, this is legit. We did legalize a document there and authorize it to be used in a foreign country. They then add that authentication certificate to it. Then a person like myself would take that to our foreign affairs and have it apostilled before the Department of Immigration can use that document.
Okay.
Listen, these processes and people talking about
Bahamian... You can't just come with listen, a piece of paper and chuck it in someone's face and say...
People talking about Bahamian passports and citizenship and being given out like candy... I can guarantee you citizenship in this country and residency is one of the hardest things to obtain.
You're saying it is
protected. It is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, you know, we've been speculating and then Ingram came on and said, listen, it hard, it's Stephen election over here, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind all of that. I'm with the FNM, but I can tell you all it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you citizenship is not easy to gain in this country or permanent residency at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so persons like myself, we are ensuring and verifying documents that people are bringing before us. We are like that first buffer between client and government.
Mm-hmm.
We are those pairs of eyes that are ensuring that the department doesn't receive fraudulent documents.
Okay.
Now, when persons decide to go by other means, we can't speak to that.
Okay.
But if persons are coming to persons like myself, immigration consultants, I've encountered one time last year, a lady came to me with a school letter from Haiti. Upon first glance, I told her this is not good.
Mm.
I said, wherever you got this from, take it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
Get a refund. Have them do it properly and I can verify afterwards. Or get a refund and check somebody else or come back to me and we can have this done properly for you.
Mm.
She went back to them. They gave her a refund because they knew that they gave her a fake document.
Wow.
Now, had it my eyes touched that document, chances are it probably would have been submitted at the Department of Immigration.
Yeah.
So this is what we do. Mm-hmm. We are helping to protect the borders. And we are, by way of our work, showing you that we are against illegal migration.
Okay.
For all these years, what we keep saying, we want you guys to do it the right way. Just do it the right way. Do it the right way.
Right.
We ain't against Asians. We are not against migrants. We just want you to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Ensuring that it's done the right way.
Let's get to the text line here on Guardian Radio today. Let's see here.
Now let them know I'm not the only one in the studio now.
Yeah, of course. Again, our special guest, John Kwa the second, also known as Christopher Davis.
Oh, shout out to Queen Mother Bat. She Angelique.
Yeah.
She's definitely listening.
Yeah, man. Appreciate her listening. Blessings, Pastor Uncle and Brother Chris Davis. When speaking about Haiti and the Bahamas relations, and even immigration and or migration challenges, please don't neglect to talk superpower nations like France, America, and Western powers, constantly interfering in Haitian politics and governance, even to certain extents at various times destabilizing Haiti, just as they do many Black African countries, the same destabilizing which continues to lead to Haitian migration for a better way of life. What show you?
Well, I will just continue on the timeline right now.
Yeah.
So, of course, after Haiti had freed themselves and laid the foundation for the ending of slavery, or chattel slavery throughout the world, of course, this was one of the reasons why the British themselves, less than 2 years later, abolished the transatlantic slave trade, because the Haitian Revolution showed them you can't bring people straight from Africa. It's better you let them be born into the plantation, and that way their desire for freedom will be lessened, right?
Mm.
And of course, as a result, who you think had to pay reparations to who? Haiti had to pay reparations to France.
Yes.
So all that money that would have been used in immigration systems and building public schools that it would have been in any other country, it was taken.
Mm-hmm.
Then they put massive, so you see we used the word embargo, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they did to Haiti was a joke. Up until about 1870, warships from almost every Western nation made sure that Haitians could only export and made it very hard for them to import.
Wow.
Numerous political assassinations throughout, you understand? But even then still, Haiti was thriving in many ways. As I think one of the texts or somebody said about that relationship in terms of trade, you know, Haiti used to feed us, right? But even when we look at things like Canep, why is Canep spelled G-U-N-E-P? But we say Canep. Because that's a Creole word. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. So that's why we say it like that. And it's so much. The consumption of rice as well. We as Gullah Geechee people, rice is a big part of our diet, big part of our culture, but we don't grow no rice. So where do you think all our rice used to come from for the most part, right? It wasn't old Brian Mahatma and all these things like we have today, right? Now, in 1915,
I wanted you to get there.
This was when the United States invaded Haiti.
Okay.
And they were there for, I mean, some will say 10 years, some say 15 years, but they were there for about two decades when you really look at it.
Right.
They went there. All of the Haitian gold was taken and put in the United States Federal Reserve for safekeeping. See, yeah, but Haiti having gold, right? Almost all gone now. And it's still in the coffers of the United States, and they have the nerve to make documentaries talking about why is Haiti so poor. Now, let me do a little side note, because we've always had a lot of talk about voodoo, too. Yes. And when the Americans were there, they swore on everything that was holy that they had Haitian priests that could raise the dead and make zombies, right? Mm-hmm. Just follow me. I know people listening and getting scared. Just follow me, right?
The phone lights up even more now.
Right, oh yeah. So let's jump back to the mid-1700s. Great, 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 another African, one of the precursors to the Haitian Revolution. In certain places in Haiti, I heard that you can't even supposed to say his name out loud. Makandal. Mm. Makandal was from a place called Mayombe. And in Mayombe, they didn't believe in jails and prisons and stuff like that. They used psychoanalytic drugs to police and punish their people for crimes.
Wow.
So what we call a zombie was really just the result of the use of the drug tetrodotoxin, which is found in lionfish, pufferfish, all these different things. And so Makandal convinced the French that he was a model, and he would have his assistant administer the right amount of tetrodotoxin to give the perfect illusion of death. They have a whole funeral, everyone crying, next day Makandal at your door knocking, look at me, I raised from the dead. Now what is that? That is just science.
He used it on himself?
Yeah, he would use it on himself, other people, quote unquote. The French doctor come feel the pulse in there, raising from the dead, right? Okay. And then of course, skipping over a lot, but when they finally caught Makandal to prove that he was not immortal, they executed him on top of a hill and burned him alive. Two versions of the story. The mythical one says he didn't die, he turned into a mosquito. But the real history is, before he died, he said, "Fear not, my people, I will come back as a mosquito and do far more damage." He was talking about yellow fever and malaria.
Yes.
And Europeans did not figure that out until the turn of the 19th century, bro. You understand? So it would be another century and a half before they started to figure out that these mythical diseases that they would put on to curses were actually caused by mosquitoes. This African scientists, as we would call them today, knew about these things and used that psychological warfare. Now, fast forward back to the U.S. invasion. The U.S. soldiers swearing, they seeing this. So this was used as psychological warfare. It had nothing to do with no hocus pocus, nothing to do with nothing like that. You understand? Now, those Americans who invaded Haiti, when they started to return, they brought these stories back. And this is what birthed the American horror film industry. You see, this degradation of African culture is so entrenched in our minds, in our culture, that we do it without even realizing it. And the Night of the Living Dead, of course, was the first ever horror motion pictures with quote-unquote zombies eating brains. But where does the word zombie come from? Zombie is the name of the god that they worshipped in the region that Makandal was from. And now they take an African deity and turn him into a brain-eating, flesh-eating monster, essentially.
Wow. That's like the Beatles and on Imhotep.
Right, exactly. You see, so this is something so interesting. And Haiti, of course, is central to that. Now, we see what happened. There's an old movie that probably don't get no spin no more because it is a little offensive, especially to a thin-skinned person. It was done by the creators of South Park called Team America. And it's a satire on how when America is spreading liberty and all this stuff, all they do is make the country 10 times worse. It's actually, I think you would thoroughly enjoy it, Uncle.
What's the name of it?
Team America. Okay. Yeah, done by the creators of South Park. It's so, it's a stupid
movie.
Cartoon.
That's become on Comedy Central.
Puppets, but it's all satire on like white imperialism, essentially, right? So these people was there, and imagine them now occupying Haiti for 20 years. We see what happens there, and then imagine that when the mindset of the world was one where Africans were at the bottom of the totem pole, I mean, the majority, racism was the order of the day back then. You understand? And then, of course, you have the Cold War and all of these things coming up, right? the Cold War was how the infamous Papa Doc really got into there. And what you find, you see the same thing with Mobutu in the Congo, right? So on the continent, you would say it's the Congo. In the West, you would say it's Haiti. And it's crazy because those that fought the hardest against slavery, you know, this is almost like white supremacy wants to teach them a lesson.
A lesson, yes.
Right? Now, this is how Papa Doc got in. Because Papa Doc and all of the Haitian, the Cuban Revolution, all this is intertwined into it. And you know, during the Cold War, man, you could have been a Satan worshiper. Weren't you in a communist?
Communist was right. The Satan.
So that was how he appealed. And it was the U.S. government that backed people like him. And this is where we see that shift that you mentioned earlier. This is when it went from merchants and sailors. You know, the xenophobia was there, but it wasn't as strong. Of course, it died down. And then now it ain't a nice light-skinned fellas like Luby them and the mulattoes and the whites coming now. Now he is the country folk, the impoverished, the desperate, who are now trying to leave this horrible regime. And then, of course, his son did it as well. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 1991. They're still making their documentary, but why Haiti so poor, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Wow. And, of course, the great Jean Aristide comes into the fray. The man wins 67% of the total vote in Haiti. And you know what the U.S. did? Because his first mandate was to ask France to pay back the reparations. Mm-hmm. That was like his main thing. And the ones who are complicit are France, of course, Spain, England, if you want to get into institutions, the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, Canada, the United States, many of our famous financial institutions around the world, IMF, World Bank, UN, all these people complicit in the state that Haiti is in today. And we had this disturbing narrative where people say idiotic things, like, well, why they can't get their country straight? Huh? All they do is burn the thing down. I was like, don't forget, we burned down the Royal Victoria Hotel in the 1950s because they wasn't treating us right now. Don't forget, in the Burma Road Uprising in 1942, we burned down half the shops there, because when you got oppressed, you know, that's what you do. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Now, Aristide comes in. Again, I believe it had been 2004.
Yeah, he came back twice.
Aristide come back. Guess how much percent of the vote this man went?
How much?
If any politician in the Bahamas could have been the amount of vote this man went, he'd get 90% of the national vote.
Wow, wow.
And what you think happened again? Invasion again.
Kicking out.
Thank you very much. So people pretend, and then you have people like Anderson Cooper and them, who might have good intentions, but who are just ignorant of the whole thing. And then you have this notion of Haiti being this cursed nation, and just a pile
and
of
let's
foolishness,
start,
right?
You know, you could even piggyback off of the Aristide stuff, and we'll probably take it on the other side with the assassination of Jovenel Moïse.
Yes.
You finally, listen, I went to Haiti during his tenure, a year or two in. My mother cried because the roads were paved.
Wow.
This is a 50-something going on 60-something-year-old woman, and she said, listen, for the first time in my life, I'm heading home, and the roads are smooth.
Wow.
This is the type of work that he was doing.
Yeah.
He was about to electrify the entire country. Mm-hmm. So he was making a change, and they said, no, sir. Haiti can't change.
Wow.
He was assassinated.
Guardian Radio Today, Haitian and Bahamian relations in a pan-African world. Of course, we're not going to get through this whole conversation today. This has been the first hour. Call us. We're going to get jumped straight to you after the break. I do apologize for not being able to get to you in the first hour, but it was just a lot to set the table. So make sure you call back right after the break. But keep it locked here on 96.9 Guardian Radio. Fresh news, smart talk all day. Back after this.
I just don't different job. Jamaica to Africa. Right? Yeah.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM.
And we're back here on Guardian Radio today with your host, Pastor Dr. Cleveland W. Aeneas III, also known as Kahun Anku Sara. Special guest in studio today, Jonkwa II, also known as Christopher Davis. We have Luby George, Am I saying it properly?
George.
Yes. And we have Mr. Beats.
Yes, sir.
We're talking about Bahamian Haitian relations in a pan-Africanist, pan-African world. Callers, let me give you an opportunity to jump into the show. You're live here on Guardian Radio today. Caller going once. I thought I was bluffing him. They tell you I was coming right. right after the break. Anyway, they could definitely call back. Let me just get some text here. Let's see. This text that says, "Good afternoon. So if you have no organic Bahamians, that means you have no organic Haitians either. What don't sit right with me? Haitians always play victims. Bahamians have a right to be worried. We're literally watching our culture shift right before our eyes. Bottom line is we already have a Haiti. People cannot make the Bahamas Haiti." Okay. What's the...
I have a question. This goes back to my question that that we talked about off air. What role does the government play in preserving our culture, or what we know as Bahamian culture, so that people who come here from other countries, like I know, who have their own culture, so that we could still have a balance. You see what I'm saying? Because
I like the question, but I also, so we started the show by saying none of us were Haitians or Bahamians.
Right.
Right. So exactly.
We were Africans.
This comes into that question of geopolitical loyalty again, and what it actually means to be Bahamian, to be Greek, to be French, to be a person from the United States, you get what I'm saying. And then, of course, they use that term organic, which is a biological term generally, right? And as we said, it has nothing to do with biology. So if someone's geopolitical loyalty is with that country, that's what it is. Right. I mean, let's use Rick Fox as a matter of fact. He's declaring that his geopolitical loyalty is of the Bahamas. Right.
Yeah.
You know, he might have lived in Canada, he might have represented the Bahamas in sport, but we know he's from here.
Yeah.
And then
I've been to school with him.
Right. And he's declaring it now. So you only have one or two silly people, you know, and they might have legitimate issues with him, but the issue with him is not about his Bahamianness.
You understand what I'm saying,
if we're being honest.
No.
And so we have the same thing here. And now also to see definitions are important. Culture is what we do now. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, and that's good things and bad things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people conflate cultural heritage with culture. Cultural heritage is unchangeable. You understand?
Okay.
And to add to that point, I know many Bahamians of Haitian descent, that is Rush and John Canoe.
That's my point from the beginning of the show. Like, you don't even know he's Asian.
Thank you. Right. You see,
I was going to ask,
you know, like,
answer a question with this question, but in what aspects is Bahamian culture being affected to that extent?
It is
and
not.
Changed?
It's a myth.
Okay, so
I can't see it.
So I could tell you what I see as, or hear people talk about as phobias. So, for example, food.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we cook. Bahamians are known to cook food a certain way, right? right.
Uh-huh.
Watch this now. So some people will be like, okay, over time, people of Haitian descent, this is like a phobia. This ain't what I say now. So y'all don't come and try.
No. It's a good point.
Y'all don't try to assassinate me.
It's a good point.
Right? Over time, Bahamian food, the taste is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Maybe a lot of the food that we know, what we could call Bahamian and so proud of to call Bahamian, will cease to exist, right? Some people have that phobia. But when it comes to culture, like you mentioned, John Canoe, some people may feel like, okay.
So what is changing the Bahamian food more? Fast food restaurants or Haitian food?
Exactly. But what's this now? But see, the problem is people ain't looking at it from a wide scope.
Because they being very
pessimistic, you know what I mean? They won't blame everything on Haitians.
But then that's where we come in.
Right. You see what I'm saying? So
simple question.
So,
is it the fast food also? What role do they play also?
It have to be the fast food also.
Yeah, that's big shots.
And within the Pan-African lens, you know.
Well, I can't speak, right?
You see where I'm going within the past. So we don't have
a Crocconcus Greek.
Oh, Greek. Okay, yeah, okay.
So the way that they prepared calamari is what they pretty much put
on the conch. Okay.
We've been eating conch long time before the Greeks came to the Bahamas in the 1880s and the 1890s.
Yes, Queen Mother.
And of course, we love gyro. We like gyro too.
Right.
We love a gyro, you know? Lamb gyro, whatever type of gyro. I love gyros. Falafel gyro is one of my favorite things in the world. People who listen in, if you want to bring me lunch.
Right, exactly.
Falafel gyro from GRK. So I'm not, and of course, I'm not saying that we should have a negative attitude towards Greek Bahamians.
No.
But I find it I think, but I find it troubling that we have this attitude towards Haitian Bahamians, you see?
Right.
And again, our culture is already inextricably linked, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they are distinct cultures that exist on their own. Mm-hmm. And this is this sort of, again, I mentioned earlier this adoption of the sentiments and the values and the ideals of white imperialism, mm-hmm. our mm-hmm. enslavers.
Mm-hmm.
And this replacement theory that you see yes. going around in America yeah. has also now been adopted yeah. By us. But culture simply don't work that way. And even if somehow that was to happen, the numbers that you said is what, somewhere between 50 and 100,000 out of the 400,000. So that would mean, let's just be generous for that one, that 25% are people of Haitian descent in some varying degree. That could even be a great-great-grandfather,
mm-hmm.
of course, but that would still count, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that amount, you know, how is it that that's portion could override the other, what, 75%?
Right.
Percent.
Yeah,
and so the only way peace, soup, and dough can stop being
we're
that.
We're much more influenced by American pop culture than Haitian food.
But the cultural thing, too, you know, here's the way I see it, too. I take my family household as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Two Haitians came to the Bahamas, my mommy and my daddy.
Mm-hmm.
They together had four kids here in the Bahamas, the eldest at 42. Years old, my oldest brother,
mm-hmm.
right? So within that one household or family structure, I see it as four Bahamians,
right.
two Haitians.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think this whole idea of not being true Bahamian and paper Bahamian and not good enough to be organic Bahamian, I think that is where we're going wrong.
Yeah.
I don't see myself as anything but Bahamian.
Because I could tell you, my grandmother is from Savannah, Georgia.
Right.
Exactly. Me Gullah Geechee.
Thank you.
Okay.
And this man speaking Gullah Geechee right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So which even moves the point, your mere presence here, your dialect, because if no one noticed was Luby George's and you was just talking, no one would assume anything.
Right.
Because
right.
you was a Bahamian,
right.
you grew up here,
right.
and you
right.
have been affected by that.
Socialize.
You speak Creole.
Yeah, people talk about assimilation. Right. Listen to me. I love about John Kudu. I don't miss John Kudu.
Right.
The Saxons, you can listen to me. I can go crazy on social media for Saxons.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean? What are we talking about? The Justilians. Right? Go,
yes.
Go ahead. I'm going to talk about them.
Yes. Yeah. That's good. Let's go to the phone lines.
Marie and Duvalier.
Yes, indeed. Exactly. Come on. Okay. Call it. Go ahead. You're live.
Hey, Pastor Enos.
How you doing, brother?
Yes, sir. Do you and your guests. You know, some things being poured down to us when we are younger, our foreparents them, and they tell us about how the Haitian them, you know. See, okay, before
tell
I get
what?
To that,
what
then
tell
I
you?
Have a business. Then I have my business. You know, when a Haitian come to my shop,
mm-hmm.
I always try to get their name. Never try to say what you want Haitian.
So how you know this be Haitian when they come in the shop?
Because I had a Haitian who used to be with me.
Oh,
and he used to tell me everything.
Oh, he used to tell you when Haitian's coming in?
And
okay.
When I get their name, I call them by their name because they don't like to be called Haitian. They can know that there's disadvantage to them. And they always say, why you call me Haitian?
Mm-hmm.
You see? So the point is, they being down, look on.
Mm.
And when I tell them, I see you as another human being like me.
Yes.
But because our parents told us what some of those people practice.
Mm.
They practice voodoo.
Mm.
And that is one of the biggest scares of Bahamian. When they say, you fool with me, I go to Haiti, I do that.
Mm.
I had a Haitian lady what used to come there, and she would show me everything. When somebody passed the money or when they turned the money or whatever, stuff like that, you know, tell them no.
Mm.
Do it the next way.
Mm.
But, my lord, but to cut the story short,
mm-hmm.
what we use to call mommy them back then, mommy and daddy them, if you notice, that is out the window now. You can't call these generations, these young generation that now.
Well, you don't know. That's my point. They speaking just like a Bahamian who been here for 200 years.
You know why? Because they Bahamians.
That's my point. I appreciate your call, though. I appreciate your call. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Caller, let's go to the next call. Caller, you're live. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. Here you're talking about
the food of the cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's going to change.
You don't think Bahamian food is going to change, is what you're saying?
I don't think that the Haitian food could change what Bahamian cook.
Right.
Or
right.
their cuisine.
Right.
Because, you know, it has something to do with the spices and stuff that they use in their food. And yeah. the style of
Sometimes
their
I
cook.
Like these Chinese. I want to taste, like, what yeah, we right. think Chinese food is.
that's the point. But yeah. Chinese right. food but Chinese food will always be Chinese food.
Right.
Regardless exactly. of what, wherever it goes. It will mm-hmm. be Chinese food. Haitian food will be Haitian food regardless of where. Haitian food could never turn into Bahamian food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because mm-hmm. you already that's already printed mm-hmm. that this is Haitian culture because mm-hmm. food tends to come up from who we are as a people, mm-hmm. how we lived, mm-hmm. how we survived.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Haitian they use a lot of their food is prepared by fried. I assume because it wasn't much refrigeration, and most people live out in the country, so they fry a lot of their food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mine would taste good. All right, but Bahamian. We could extend more. Now, what I see change that I didn't like in Bahamian food is the Johnny Cake. Because that's a part of culture.
And Guavadam, too. Don't forget that one.
I got to bring Chef Simeon Hall on the top of these
the way they,
yeah.
The way they changed the Johnny Cake into like more like a cake.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah,
so they took away the essence from what our grandparents, how they used to, how they had to prepare because they didn't have certain things.
Mm.
And I feel like that's what identity is.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't go away from that. This is how, this is what we grew up through the suffering. Through the suffering. This is how we survive.
Appreciate
that's what, to me, that's what food is all about. We ate what we ate to survive.
Yeah. And yeah. This, we appreciate it. We appreciate it. And the caller makes a very good point.
Right.
You know, when I order Haitian food, I want it to taste like Haitian food. When I order what we call, I see Chinese food in China. I didn't see anybody else. Yeah. No disrespect to the Chinese. I just
the Chinese
say,
probably don't eat what they give it us.
Exactly. Exactly. But you understand what I'm saying. When I go to the Greek place, I want to eat Greek food. You understand? And so, good point, caller.
Great point.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Call you live.
Hi, how are you all?
Great, man. Thanks for calling.
You know,
you make it true.
I know, right?
I believe. I'm laughing. I'm having a James Kaplan moment, laughing at myself.
Yes, love it.
Because, you know, I'm thinking about my family,
mm-hmm.
and my mother ended up having three children for a particular Haitian man,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that affected my sister a lot, right?
So this was different. A different father is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
So when we grew up, you know, right off B Street area there, mm-hmm. at that time growing up, when the Haitian people came in the community, like they lived, one of them lived right next door to us.
Mm-hmm.
So she would go outside to wash her meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she would wash her meat in the slop bucket, what we consider like a slop bucket, right?
Right.
And so to her, that was just washing the meat in the bucket.
Mm.
Now, for Bahamians, you use that for something else.
Right.
So psychologically, you have these certain mindset. Like, you see them living a certain way. They're just really living to survive.
Yeah.
And so growing up as children, we're just silly children. Silly. You're just your Haitian self. You're saying all these
yeah.
stupid things. Not
we all did
life
it. We all did it.
Your own brothers and sisters have a mm-hmm. Haitian daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get mad and we fight one another...
So that was their ace in the hole for you.
Yeah,
yeah, your Asian brother and sister.
Yeah, you know.
And I'm glad you could laugh about it today because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what I want to come out of this conversation is how much alike we are,
yeah.
and how much you could sit there and be raving about Haitians, and you could be talking to Haitians,
right.
And I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm.
My sister even changed her last name because she was ashamed of that.
Oh, wow!
And I just post my brother on Facebook, and he lives in Georgia now, and he left Nassau. And went to Georgia, got his doctorate degree, and doing very well. And that is all from his Haitian heritage,
yeah.
slash the Haitian heritage. They're doing well. So I'm looking back at my little silly challenge. So I said, boy, Deborah, you guys are so silly.
Yeah. I appreciate you, man. And I thanks for bringing some laughter to this conversation. Yeah,
yes. And they should be allowed to, you know, with no fear, to celebrate both heritage.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so,
just like we have our Greek fest, eh? No, yes.
We don't complain about that. We just had the Chinese boat dragon,
yes,
festival,
yes,
thing, yes, and that was packed.
Yes.
We loved it.
Yes.
The Haitian flag there the other day. Oh, why are they being allowed to celebrate their culture?
Yes. Yes.
And a big U.S. flag flying up on the corner. Surely.
And that's the thing. Street. So my father's actually born in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay.
Mm.
That's the Fisk crew.
That's the Fisk crew, right? And Mahari, right? But so when my music, as a musician, when I started to do music, I had more of an American hip hop vibe. Mm-hmm. I went to school in America. That was the music that influenced me. And so I used to get the kick body. But I remember going to certain prominent musicians who I cool with now. I ain't gonna call their name because I don't want to see them as if they are against the music per se. But at that time, it was like, no man, your music ain't Bohemian.
It ain't Bohemian.
You know, and I remember being very confused, like, okay, I hear you, and I'm not saying, you know, that Bohemian music doesn't have a flavor now, but I used to work at Island FM, so I know what all the Bohemian music sound like. I know what Blind Blake sound like. I know what different, it wasn't rake and scrape yet.
No. And listen, to that point, I can play some Haitian, old school 50s, 60s Haitian music for you right now, outside of the actual words being in French or in Haitian Creole. You would think it's the same thing. Yeah. Exact same tune.
All
beat and rhythm.
All them come out of Mentos.
Exact same thing.
Right, exactly.
The Mentos music.
Right.
So these are points that I just want people to examine and just put down your fear for a second. Just examine some things so that we could, because we got to heal this country. Let's go back to the phone lines. Call you live.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Daniels, and good afternoon to your guests.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, brother. I'm glad you said just now you got to heal this country.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what I'm talking about just now. That's important, as you said, brother. Heal this country.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like I always did, Brother Davis was saying something that we adopted the ways of the oppressor, right? Mm-hmm. The mindset type way. And I had heard that prior to our majority rule, prior to our independence type thing, that the UBP government, they were deporting Haitians, right? And that when we took over, we intensified the process. You understand? And the thing about it is that the question I've been asking is that my grandfather told me that they used to get all type things from the Haitian boat. So
yes,
Haitians was good, you know what I mean? Same as if it was in no tension, you know what I mean? We didn't recognize any problems, right?
He's
but
hungry.
I'm trying to figure out, like, prior to majority rule, you know what I mean? The black people here were, were segregated, you know, had problems, you know what I mean? Didn't get equal rights and different things like that. So, you know what I mean? To us, our problem is the oppressor. So I'm trying to figure out, right, like, when did, during the process of us becoming independent and getting majority rule, did our focus or our adversary go from the oppressor to our own brother, the Haitian people? I'm trying to figure out how did that process happen and how did we just forget one?
Social engineering.
And just pick up on the other, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? But that's something that always confused me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I told you before, Brother Angu, I don't call myself Bahamian. I identify myself as an African because I feel as if the Bahamian is a British construct.
Mm.
And like how Brother Davis just explained, it's like an abstract thing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? We still sit around today, they still talking about what is Bahamian culture, what is a Bahamian, because why? A Bahamian ain't just a black person.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You understand? So you can't pinpoint a culture when all kind of different people got their skin color. The only way you could do that is when you inside a common group where it's just you and your people. Them.
Yeah,
you understand? But it's like calling yourself a Bahamian to me, right? It's like in the Roots movie, you know what I mean? When Kunta Kinte was forced to call himself Toby, you know what I mean? It's like we are willingly calling ourselves Toby. We could call ourselves Kunta Kinte again, brother, because divide and conquer is the system that they're using to keep us separated, man. And so every educated individual in this country, right, should promote, if we want to heal this country, let's stop this Bahamian pride foolishness, because we are all African people, man. Let's try to educate the children that we are all one people. Like Anku say, we're the same people, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, my brother. What I always say on this show and any show I'm on, you know, Africa is the root. Bahamas is the fruit. Haiti is the fruit. Jamaica is the fruit. These are different fruits. Africa is the root. I think a lot of people are afraid to call yourself African, because I don't. Africans want pre clearance, you see? You want that pre clearance.
We love the pre clearance.
You get our pre clearance, everything.
Strong currency.
Yeah, you know, we one to one. You know what I mean?
You saw the conversations during the political season the other day where a person saying, if we keep letting them come like this, America might take away the pre clearance.
Yeah.
People are literally saying that. Yeah, like, yeah, that is what matters.
Right.
Listen, don't let us get one invitation to one U.S. independence something. We're ready to show that off. Look, they invite me.
Yes.
Like, I want to go to that. But the Haitian Flag Day? Why are these people celebrating around here? Come on, listen. We so brainwashed. This, telling funny, man.
This is where the education comes in. Call your life. Call her going once.
Yeah, go. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Great, sir.
Good.
I have a question for Ruby George. Also, I have a comment.
Sure.
My comment is, first is, like, if your mother and daddy born in Haiti and you born here, why did you still raise your flag against the Bahamian people talking about it's more to us than y'all and all of that? Why are y'all trying to divide us in our own country? This is the Bahamas, not Haiti. And that's what I have a big problem is. I don't have no problem with Haitian. I grew up with Haitian.
So let him answer the question, Nicola. Let him respond.
I'm contradicting what you're saying, yeah. You're really contradicting.
You're still here. We're still here. But yeah, let him respond.
And I don't think he was listening to the full show either.
No. That's why I want you to respond. You
know, earlier I said that I don't consider myself anything but a Bahamian. Of course, my Africanism, I carry this with me every single day since visiting Ghana and bought this in Ghana.
Yes, we Afro-Bahamian.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't consider myself anything but Bahamian. Yeah. But you spoke about there being a difference between culture and cultural heritage.
Right.
Like the female caller just a while ago, the woman who talked about her brothers and her siblings who's in the U.S. who had, you know, dual backgrounds. He should be allowed to celebrate both of his heritages.
Mm-hmm.
I am a Bahamian of Haitian descent.
Mm-hmm.
That is clear.
Just as
my parents are Haitians. I'm of Haitian descent. Yes, on Haitian Independence Day, which is actually Independence Day,
right?
Right. January 1st. Yeah. I'm going to eat the soup jumu, the pumpkin soup.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pay homage to Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Toussaint Louvertures, and I'm going to do it on Haitian Flag Day, May 18th. I'm going to celebrate that.
Yeah.
Guess what? In a few weeks now, I'm going to be out at Clifford Park or wherever else celebrating the 10th of July, Bahamas Independence Day. I am Bahamian.
You're supposed to do that.
But I do it. So when you say raise the Haitian flag against the Bahamian people, what does that mean?
Let me explain it. What I mean is that, okay, you have Haitian Flag Day.
Mm-hmm.
They bringing up the issue. You have more Haitian in this country bringing up their flag against the Bahamian flag. I have a problem with that because this is the Bahamas, not Haiti.
So let me ask.
What Haitian got to understand? God gave the Bahamas to Bahamians, not the Haitians.
So let me ask you a question.
You need to go to Haiti and tag your own flag.
Let me ask you a question then. Have you ever been down with that road name on West Hill Street and see the Greek Orthodox Church and stuff like that and see the Greek flag? Do you have the same?
You don't see them all over the place doing that.
Yes, you do. They have an entire festival called Greek Fest.
Don't lie on them people.
They have an entire festival called Greek Fest. Go down West Hill Street right now, and you can see a Greek flag flying high. You see? So it's nothing about being against. You know, every nation, particularly nations like the Bahamas, that have, despite what people may think, have done one for themselves, you will have people trying to come there. You understand? This is what happens in Britain, the U.S., Canada. You see it in Trinidad and Barbados a bit, as you see it in the Bahamas in there, because Trinidad, Barbados, and the Bahamas have done pretty well for themselves, right? But to frame it as something like going against is actually
one
not,
more
right?
Thing, so before, and I could go.
Yeah,
one
okay.
More thing.
Yeah.
Why won't all of these successful Haitians don't go back to Haiti and build Haiti instead of trying to destroy the Bahamas?
Okay, because they Bahamian.
That's a good point that the caller is trying to make. We just, early in the show, caller, maybe you'll have to go back and listen to the show, right? We talked about how many external forces are in play to destabilize the Haitian economy. So there are Haitians who are trying. Wyclef is one. If you know Wyclef Jean, he almost went to try to be the president, right? But there are so many external forces at work trying to actually successfully destabilize in Haiti. It's not as simple as going back and fixing Haiti. It's not that simple. And I think that's why this show is so important, because we have to be educated about the global reality of what Haiti is bigger than just its influence on the Bahamas. Haiti has an influence on the world. You understand? You make a good point with regard to the flags, right? I think we also need to educate any foreign national, if you're going to put your flag up, also put up a Bahamian flag. If you're going to ride around with your car, right? We were just having this conversation amongst friends because I saw a video
flag
where...
Flag etiquette?
Yeah, flag etiquette. Just understanding flag etiquette.
I think as a result of the vitriol and what the negativity towards Haitian flag day, I think most Bahamians actually began to learn about flag
etiquette.
Because I saw screenshots of the actual law being floated around on social media. So before then, did you have any reason to check that out?
No.
Many people didn't even know it existed. No, I agree. If we have rules and we have regulations in the country, I remember my time on Guardian Radio, and this was back in 2014-15.
Yeah.
Sat in the same seat that you sat.
Yeah.
I used to do this consistently.
Yes.
In Haitian Creole, but because it's in Haitian Creole, wouldn't understand. So when you ask, exactly, that was the basis of my show.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what the rules and regulations are in the Bahamas. Disseminate that information in Haitian Creole. This is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we see what's happening with people being arrested at the airports with, you know, traveling with large sums of money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we explain to them what the rules and regulations are as it pertains to declarations and where to go, how to go, which forms to fill out so that you are in full compliance of the rules. Mm-hmm. And so this is where the education also comes in, and people like myself, mm-hmm. this is the role I seek to play.
Yeah.
And that is why I call my businesses and my shows The Flip Side. You know, we try to get the information,
mm-hmm.
and we disseminate that in a language
mm-hmm.
that the people will understand.
Mm-hmm.
But because my video is in Haitian Creole, that, listen, it ain't directed to you.
No.
But if you knew what I was saying, you would realize that I'm actually echoing you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making sure that they do know what the rules and regulations are. But outside of that, who has been teaching flag etiquette, for an example?
So this is why we're having this show.
But yet you're saying you can't do it, you shouldn't do it. So but who's teaching?
We have to. Our stations aren't the only ones that violate.
They are not.
No.
Etiquette.
No.
This was my point.
So I was having a conversation with some friends of mine, and they were talking about enforcement. And another group said, you can't have enforcement until you have education.
Thank you.
You got to educate people about what it is that the rules are saying before you just go there and start trying to take people's flag off their car, right? Because a lot of these, again, these are symptoms of racism, white supremacy. That's a word that resonates on this show anytime I'm on it, because we don't understand that point. But let's go back to the phone lines. Call you live.
Hello.
You're live. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Right now, I'm so disgruntled.
Sure.
It always takes too long to get to the phone line.
Sorry, everybody got you because you're taking long.
Yeah.
I got other people waiting.
My point is, you said Greek fair.
Mm-hmm.
But Asians have a Asian day.
Mm-hmm.
No respect, and we could agree to disagree. Right? But, and like, if you don't take care of what you have, then how would you entrust something on somebody else? Like, everybody have their own problems. You don't mind Asians here.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, we're black people. But Asians come here like they're entitled.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch all of the talk shows, like, accommodate this mm-hmm. kind of when we against certain things. If your neighbor come to you for sugar, you give him sugar. You think he gets it's proper for him to turn around and say, I get some water and some conflict with that. Like.
So, caller, your main concern is that you feel...
My main concern is that... talk of this gentleman, mm-hmm. the gentleman was called before, mm-hmm. which I was trying to get a point in before he even called.
Sure, go ahead.
Is that, like... If you come here to strengthen yourself, then you should strengthen your people. But if you can't take care of what you have, why should we entrust what we have on you?
But did you understand the point that was made after the last caller? Did you understand that point that I made?
I may have.
I'm not trying to come down on you. I just want to make sure we have a clear, because I understand your point, right? What I was simply saying was the Haitian people would love to go and fix Haiti and make it the best country it could be.
So.
I work with Haitians. I know Haitians. This is a conversation that I've had with Haitians. Hold on, let me just be fair to me. I listen to you. Let's just listen. Okay? There are external forces that will not permit that.
Powerful ones.
powerful ones.
Internal too.
And internal, right? Mm-hmm. So Kuala, it's bigger than the Haitians wanting to take over the Bahamas. That's not what's happening as much as you have colonial, neo-colonial forces that would love to see us arguing again with each other as opposed to coming together to figure out what the real problem is. But let me let you finish.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, because I may get cut off in a second.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
This is how much behemoth love Haitians, right? If you were, if the government were to make a tax right now to be able to help Haiti, and I'm sure if you were to take a referendum, the behemoth would help Haiti get a taxation on their money. You understand what I'm saying?
I hear you.
To try and help Haiti. We are all aware of the external forces that came against Haiti. But as you know, you the bed you lay in is the bed you made for yourself. And if you say you was the first to start the independence and the revolution and these things, you should have been more responsible.
But so Carla, I don't know if you quite get
clearly
that.
Didn't hear you.
Yeah.
So I guess he just missed.
No, and let's be gentle with the people because some people are emotional and sometimes they're not hearing what is being said. Or I just pray, just do a little research. We got AI now; it could help you. Could pull everything.
Go ahead. So I mean, I ain't gonna spend too much time on it, you know, because you know, again, I understand where he's coming from, but much of what he said was actually completely erroneous. So let me just respond as Luby did earlier with another question. That would be like blaming Bahamians for the decisions that are made by the Prime Minister and the monarchy in England. How can you blame the average citizen of a nation for the decisions that are made that they have no control, and they just in survival mode? To me, it's just ridiculous and crazy. And then we have different groups, I ain't gonna call no name, who did come to actually take over industry. Who did come and implement the truck and credit system? You're growing pineapple or you're picking sponge. They paying you in the same thing which you grow when you come asking for money. Imagine you working for them and you owe them money. And the relationship between us and our brothers and sisters to the south has been an overtly positive one, you know? And it's sad because, you know, these mentalities, as we keep stressing it, as sort of the adoption of these white supremacist things, you see it's mixed in with Christian dogma. Somehow, and I always make this point, one group of people, we're talking about Christians and the people who they claim is doing this, one group rape, enslave, kidnap, destroy villages, burn it down, enslave your children, your grandchildren, and all that. Another group were the victims of that. And yet somehow the group that were the victims of that are somehow the bad guys. Yeah, it's crazy, you know?
And if I'm not mistaken, Haiti is what, 80% Catholic, eh? Yep.
Exactly. And they more scared about voodoo than Bahamians.
And also to that guy's point, I have never met a Haitian in my 40 years that doesn't dream about going back to Haiti.
Yeah.
In fact, as soon as they get up on their feet, one of the first things they do, you know, paying the ASUS and that sort of thing, every year they're sending bits and pieces of monies back home to build their house that they never had because in their minds, one day I will be returning. But I just can't go now.
Hey, Luby, let me put something to you. I know you know. So, and this is another thing, because someone was talking about, they're taking up all our resources. Again, I'm not actually convinced. So how much does a Bahamian who is making minimum wage pay to NIB? Is it even $100?
That depends on them and their employer. Okay, but right. I can tell you the lowest scale of work permit is around $2,000 a year.
Thank you
per
very
year.
Much.
Each thank one you. Person, right?
To NIB, right?
And to NIB, it's thank about $1,700. No, that $2,000 is to immigration.
Oh, of course.
To NIB, so it's about $1,700 at NIB. But are they claiming at NIB? I don't think so. They're not going for the sick benefits and that sort of thing.
Of course not.
Maybe if somebody dies. you know, right, family right. may receive that $1,100
So you're saying then that Bahamian should be thanking?
I'm not saying not that they should be thanking them. I'm not saying that they should be thanking them. We just no, look, I'm not saying I'm not saying that at all.
That's a lot of money.
No. I'm not saying that at all. But what we don't do, what we do not do, is we do not look at the contributions.
Exactly.
The positive contributions. And also, I heard Zavago lying, this is years ago. I don't even think he remembers this at UB. He was a part of a panel. And somebody posed a question as it pertains to remittances. You know, the Western Unions, the CAMs, the money grab, people sending money out of the country. Oh, they're taking it and they're sending it out. Well, he said something very simple. He said equal value for that money permanently remains in the Bahamas through their labor. That house, that construction site that they worked on, Bahamians are going to live in that permanently. So that couple of dollars that they made and was able to send a percentage back home, you got equal value, if not even more value for that. That permanently remains here in the Bahamas for Bahamians to enjoy. And we don't look at the contributions of these individuals while they're here. Exactly. I want to make this point quickly, too, as we talk about, you know, work permits and that sort of thing. Who hiring them?
That's the question.
I know.
They hiring the
salary. No, thank you.
Hold on, let's go even. But I want to say, too, in terms of the money being sent out, if let's assume that for people who have that argument, no more money gets sent out and all the money stay here. Is that going to eradicate minimum wage? Are Bahamians still going to be poor? I'm just saying, if the money stays, everybody's bank account can expand exponentially.
You know? And so that's why, for me, this conversation is important, because there are forces which we ain't even talking about today that are really at play. And,
certainly.
And they just would love for us to be at odds with each other. Yeah. Let's go back to the phone lines. Call you live.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Great, man. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Louis. Hey, Mr. Beats, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, bro? What's up?
I know the voice.
Yeah, you know the voice, man. It's the one and only, bro. Abba side. Yeah. Yeah, my brother. Great and interesting conversation. Anku, love your show.
Thank you.
The way you are sensitizing and educating Bahamian about their Pan-African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
What we feel to realize is that that's what it is. Pan-African. We're all African. There's a one part of this story that is not being told. The Bahamas was depopulated several times. Okay?
Yep.
So when people say indigenous Bahamian, I ask, what is that?
Yep.
All right? That does not exist.
Right.
See, because the word Bahamian itself does not exist before 1973. Yeah. Okay? I hold a passport, two of them as a matter of fact, okay, said that I am British subject. I never said Bahamian. Remember when it was buried in the Bahamas?
Yep.
That was the slogan Ministry of Tourism used to play, buried in the Bahamas worldwide. Okay, I started traveling, Haitian parents, I started traveling from age three with my British passport. That British passport held so much value. Okay, the average Bahamian doesn't understand that word. But we can still claim that heritage, by the way. That's another show.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to understand something. Haitian remain Haitian. And we're free from slavery because of what Haiti did.
Yep.
1790 to 1793. That was like what was it, gentlemen? A 10-year war? 1803?
No, it was 14 years, actually. And they lost a third of their population fighting for all Africans to be free, essentially.
Wow. Okay. So what they did, what was the first thing that was declared after their freedom? Did they get rid of all the whites? What did they do to the world? What was their declaration to the world?
Well, it was freedom and liberty for all. Egalite, something. It was something in Creole. No,
that he said. What was said? He said that any man
touches the soil.
Child that can make it to our shore that is in bondage.
Right. Free, right. So we mentioned that at the beginning.
Not any black, but any man.
Yeah.
Any man, not any black. Any man.
Yeah. Because he was they were also referring to indigenous people.
Yes.
But of course, it was mainly
the
world system when you did that declaration.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay? So you have to understand the flag day that is flown on Haitian Flag Day, that is representing deep history. The flag day that we behave
and that's the education we need.
Take part of when it's Bahamian Flag Day, it's that.
Yeah.
I don't see our flag as Bahamian when it's Bahamian flag.
Do you think it needs to be rebranded? to
we rebranded. We talk about indigenous and culture and everything. Mm-hmm. Bro, listen to me. In the hotels, I don't hear Bahamian music. I hear more reggae. I hear more American music than I hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even hear us talking about Joseph Spence. We don't go into that.
We start with Joseph Spence of Clifton.
Yeah.
You don't go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know who Joseph Spence was?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They study him.
He was a good genius. Yeah, right.
Smithsonian mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. Yeah. Yeah. He is being aired.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's being showcased and displayed.
Wow.
Right. Compton music did not change. It remains the same.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That tune, that beat that goes from Africa is in us.
Mm-hmm.
It stays the same. That beat that we call Junkanoo, we changed that genre of the drum beat. We changed that genre of the bells and the cowbell, but it's all about the drums, the tunes. We've changed it. We went away from the originality of that culture itself. We are more Americanized than we are Bahamian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? We fail to realize that Haiti or St. Dominique, the island of St. Dominique is so, so important to the freedom of mm-hmm. all black people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we as Bahamians refuse to accept our part. They have built us. World mm-hmm. War One, they fed us. World War Two, they fed us. They was navigating the Bahamas on sloops for years. They've been trading with us.
Mm-hmm.
They're entrenched. Irregardless, if I chose to change my name from French connotation to now Anglo connotation, that doesn't mean that that root did not come from Haiti or from Africa.
Yes, right.
So there's no such thing as indigenous Bahamian. In 1973, everybody that was here basically became Bahamian.
Yes, geopolitical.
So how do you put an original on the? How do you change that? Africa remains Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to stop the dichotomy that exists between Haiti and the Bahamas needs to go away mm-hmm. so we can grow
right.
and we can
and heal man.
Yeah. And build a beautiful country for the world to see.
Powerful. Yes.
Haiti problem will be resolved mm-hmm. because the world is waking up
right.
and understanding the important role that Haiti played in the freedom mm-hmm. of men from slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So one day, we as Bahamians can have an honest conversation with ourselves and say, you know what? Welcome, my brother. Welcome, my sister. We are all one.
Right.
We are all one. One Bahamas. I think it was Anderson Island. That was his famous one Bahamas. Luby, mm-hmm. am I right or wrong?
Right, you're right. Yes, sir.
Okay, we are one. We are one. We are Pan-Africans. We are one. Yeah. Let's grow. They don't employ themselves. Bahamian companies use them. Because what? They're dedicated. They're loyal.
Mm-hmm.
$250 or $275 a week, you give that to a Bahamian. He say he can't live. A Haitian lives, and he flourishes. He takes it, and he multiplies. That seed multiplies. In 10 years, you see his life. In 10 years, see the average Bahamian life. He wants the polo. He wants the what? The Armani. How can you afford these things when education comes first?
Yeah.
Thank you okay, so much.
So we're losing sight of what's really important.
Yeah.
Yes, embrace sir. Our brothers and sisters. We're all Pan-African.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, all Pan-African.
Thank you so much. This text says, good day. This dialogue reminds me of the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter situation. Nobody is saying that there are only Haitian immigrants here. The issue is about the scale and impact of illegal immigration. Every country has immigrants. The question is whether it is legal, manageable, and sustainable for a small country like ours. So, Dexter, one of the reasons why this show is so important, I would love to get the numbers of the illegal immigrants that are not from Haiti. Because yeah. I think you would be surprised to know how many of them are not from Haiti. And I think you also would be surprised to know how things operate in the upper echelon of our mm-hmm. country. And how expats are able to move and maneuver in this country freely. Mm-hmm. You understand?
And notice we call them expats.
Yes, we don't call them immigrants.
So if a Haitian professional come here, they still just a Haitian migrant. Yep. When them say from Europe and
exactly
and
expat. Now they expat. You know? So even in that. But thank you for texting. Caller, you live here on Guardian Radio today.
Oh man, I'm cool.
Hey my brother.
Peace.
Davina, Christopher, and Luby.
Yes,
sir. Welcome.
You're going to have to do a part 3, 4, 5, and 6.
He was like, you know, he's going straight to drink.
You know, I tell you something, man. My mama used to have a preschool. And let me do this. Mm-hmm. And there was this young boy. He used to bring his food. I never knew that he was Haitian. In fact, I never realized that 90% of our students were Haitian.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But this boy used to bring his lunch. And I sort of like got a whiff of it. And he kind of liked my mommy cooking because really he never had that. So I look forward to when he come and lunchtime because we switch and we sit down. He happy? I happy.
Trading.
All right?
Yeah.
But yeah, we need to look at the positive and stop this, what they're trying to pin on us.
Right.
Because today, if you look at it, our bus system would crumble if we didn't have the Haitian contribution just to catch the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm saying because I used to drive a bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So we need to just stop this, man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Luby, I'm attempting to do, and I might not even live long enough to complete it, but I have some Haitian girls and boys who are helping me with it, an online educational platform, and we cover just about every course there is. In fact, I'm going to use some material I'm hearing today in the course. And I hope, Uncle, you could forward.
Yeah, I could give it to him. Yeah.
I could share some of it.
I want you to do this some more and more and more and more so that we could come out of this ignorance, eh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much.
Great call, man.
Caller, you're live here on Guardian Radio today.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Great, man. Thanks for calling.
Boy, you have the correct fellows on this show to carry on that topic.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's a topic that you and I always come back to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's some neo-colonial construct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think we fail to see how planned it is.
Mm.
So, you know, it's planned, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, if Darwin's behavior wants a wake-up call as to the contribution of the Haitian, of Haitian behavior, go inside any John Shea food store first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Any day, any part of the day. Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm.
The early morning stuff, they are the only people in there.
I see what you're
saying. And they buy in stuff for their restaurants and their food stores and all the stuff.
Mm.
Okay? You know, we need to wake up in terms of what we're going to do as a collective, you know, because you know, in spite of all our concerns, all the powers outside of this country, they see us as a collective.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep.
You know, they see us as a
collective. We're the ones that don't see it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I see
Donald
Trump's
here. He should walk in Bermuda.
What's the difference?
It's only the politicians who bring up this system. Who bring up this difference like each 5 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only the politicians bring up mm-hmm. this discussion every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it. Oh, Chris there, right?
Yes, yes. Sir.
Okay. Chris.
Yes, sir.
Look into this. Look into this thing, because it seems like I've come to a better understanding of like where we are. If you don't understand what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just think of a big plantation.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, the job of the political parties is to run the plantation, to keep us distracted.
Mm.
And the same persons who have been running the country for 300 years, they still get to run the country, and they are not impacted by anything that happens.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, the guys who we elect, they still pledge allegiance to the king, the queen, and mm-hmm. and their successors each 5 years.
But they like talk,
and in that way,
save
they
our
maintain,
sovereignty.
Okay?
Yes,
and in
sir,
that way,
I
they
understand.
Maintain the status quo.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's funny because me and call no names, but you know, that SOS, save our sovereignty thing, was something, and of course, it was let's be honest, you know, it was directed towards people of Haitian descent, right? And it's crazy because we just watched, although I did spot one or two that didn't say the Charles or Chucky Boys, I call them thing. And anyone who know me, I get strong resentment for Chucky Boy them. Strong resentment, you know, and even with my own family and political connections, I often don't attend certain things like that, you know. And you're absolutely right, but then remember, too, it's also external and internal forces. Yes. And I think we as Africans need to come together because, as Luby mentioned with Moises the other day, you know, you do too much, you do too good, you know, and the sad part is, as Tony McKay said, how many lives must we give before we are allowed to live? And as an African leader, including the Caribbean, when you take certain steps, you got to be willing to get locked up or dead. And I can leave that right there.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much.
So you see what I said? All right.
Appreciate the call. Appreciate the call. So I have a caller here a taxpayer rather, who was saying that the point that we made about expats, as we call them, as opposed to immigrants, maneuvering in their space. They say, you support my point. Nobody is complaining about expats affecting things like housing, healthcare, schools, quarters, infrastructure, and national identity. But let me say this. The jobs that the expats and the monies that they get are not going to behemoths.
Right.
That could actually trickle down into the economy. So they are affecting the economy in an inverse way. Where the Haitians may not have the money, so they have to lean on the social resources more than the expat. The expats come in and they, in their own way, are stopping Bahamians from being able to make the kind of money that they could make.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, that green dream.
You see what I'm saying?
Our educated brothers and
sisters. So this is why 66% of people who go off to school do not come back.
Yes.
Because the expat can have their job.
No, well, when you're white, you don't get beat with the same stick. No. I can leave that right
now. No. Let's go to the phone lines. Phone lines. Let up. Call your life.
Hey, everything. Thank you so much. I'll be quick. I appreciate this opportunity. However, I do disagree with this pan-Africanism as a black man.
Sure.
I think that that to me is racist.
Sure.
If the white people was doing the same thing, that's the same thing that we faced historically. As a matter of fact, in Africa.
You want us to address the point, or you just want to make a comment?
No, I want to make a comment, then y'all can address
it. Okay, sure.
I know we're short for time.
Sure, go ahead.
And in Africa, predominantly, blacks were actually selling to the white men. They were grabbing others from other tribes and selling their own thing. And that's what helped the slave trade to continue for so long as it did. So this is not nothing new. We were doing it to our own self. So yes, we do have a issue, and I think Bahamian, and we have to be careful we don't be prejudiced towards Haitians. So I'll address that quickly.
Yes, sir.
That's because we do go too far with that, right?
Okay.
And I think sometimes this mindset that we're in such a wonderful country, we have these privileges, we don't want no one else to have it. And I get that. But I also think there is also this other issue, that's where the dichotomy is, where there is an issue where you have a lot of persons, the more persons come to education system, you suffer education because now you have to divert a lot of resources to the children of these persons who come. Because now you have this expansion on the health, this strain on the health care additionally as well. And then lastly, on the point where, yes, they do contribute. I agree with that. But there's also the other part, because now what's the cost of educating their children? What's the cost of the health care for those that now that we kind of just imported into the system? And again, I'll leave on this lastly. Listen, I'll trade one Haitian for three Bahamians, right? That's how much I believe that Haitian, what a lot of them value. I believe that if we could give switch, I'd switch at least three Bahamians for one Haitian, because I believe they bring that much value. And I believe that we take for granted what we got. Thanks, bro.
Thank you so much. So when we come back, Chris, I can let you respond.
Just put a pin in that.
I also want to respond because
it's sad that we actually believe this great.
Oh,
great
wow. Life. Listen, this, you know? We didn't even get a chance to come back. Yeah. It's 4:00.
What?
Man.
Africans is the only people in the world who get blamed for their own genocide.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
It's crazy.
And normalization is pan-European.
Thank you.
Anything was normal is white.
Yeah.
Right? But I appreciate the calls. I appreciate the texts. I appreciate my guest today, John Quad. You got to do a part two. Luby Jord and Mr. Beards. I want to thank Chris Penniman for being our producer today. The Talking Heads are up next, Naughty and MJ. So please keep it locked here at 96.9 Guardian Radio. Fresh news, smart talk all day. Namaste, family.
I don't like it, 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 I don't like it,